picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, this evening they're going to be your views, because the first hour is going to be open lines. Instead of doing open line Wednesday, we're going to do open line Tuesday, and our telephone number, as you know, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Thought maybe we'd start out talking a little bit about economics and about the General Motors strike. Now, those of you who have been following General Motors know that over the last couple of years, they've lost about $12 billion on their operations here in the United States. Now, General Motors is doing very well with their operations elsewhere. They manufacture cars in Mexico and in Canada and in China. In fact, they're the largest producer of cars in communist China today. But certainly General Motors has tremendous obligations about, they say, about $50 billion that it owes fund to take care of the health care benefits and pensions of retired workers, not only the worker but his wife. And so $50 billion, they've been trying to work out some sort of a deal with a union where they'd give them $30 or $40 billion, and the union would then have all that money. And of course, the union managers, the union hierarchy would have all that money, and of course, usually what happens is they get their hands on the money, and why, of course, they can always funnel a little off to their friends and family, and that's the difficulty whenever you give organizations massive amounts of money. And unions throughout the years, whether it be the Teamsters or the Longshoremen, so often that money ends up in other people's hands. But General Motors would be able to be fully free of that obligation, which is really weighing them down, and they need to get rid of that $50 billion debt that they have, the promise to setting up a trust fund for their retired employees. And they're talking, you know, well over 100,000 retired employees that they have to provide benefits for, whereas Toyota, I think, only has about 1,200 retired employees here in the United States, so they can sell their cars much cheaper. Well, right now, of course, General Motors has been losing money on every car it sells, so they have been planning on cutting back about 20% in production during the third quarter of this year. And what a great thing it is to have a strike. Once you can get the workers out on strike, then you don't have to pay them. They've got about 3 months' worth of General Motors cars now. If they didn't make one car for 3 months, they'd be fine. Ordinarily, if they were to cut back on their production lines, they still, according to the union contracts, have to pay those workers whether they're working or not. So this is the greatest scam of all time. And the employees are going to go out. They're going to get about $200 a week instead of probably, you know, about $1,000 a week that they've been making. In a couple of months, while the union will no longer have any money, the employees are not going to be getting any pension benefits during this time. General Motors will save a great deal of money. And, of course, and they may even just say, well, if the union's going to act like this, we'll just pull up and leave altogether, and you're not going to have any jobs, and you're not going to have any pension benefits. And so the losers in a lose, or the workers are in a lose-lose position, and this is part of the overall effort to impoverish the people here in America as we ship our jobs overseas. It is this the fact that we have all of these industries, we have no tariffs to protect them, and how do you, of course, get a worker who's making, well, on the average of $70 an hour it costs, really, with retirement benefits and health benefits, to compete with a worker who worked for $3 a day over in communist China? And we'll be right back. Give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and of course this is the time that we have open lines just talking about really what's happening as far as the General Motors strike is concerned, and I very much fear that the workers are going to lose and lose a great deal during this. And of course this whole scam, this method by which the union bosses work with the employers has been going on for a long time. One of the stories I remember very well was told by Milton Friedman in a book he wrote called Capitalism and Freedom. And it went into the close behind-the-scenes relationship between the union bosses for the United Mine Workers, and that was, of course, John L. Lewis, and the mine employers. And so every time that the people who owned the coal mines would, you know, get a large supply of coal ahead, why then, of course, the United Mine Workers would call a strike. And the mine workers would go out on strike, and they'd be picketing, and of course they wouldn't be getting any income, maybe $100 a week or something from the union. But this would allow the mine owners to get rid of their massive inventory that they had. They weren't losing any money. They had the coal already mined, and it had been mined when the employees were getting a much lower wage scale. And then, of course, when the mine owners had pretty well gotten rid of all of their excess of coal, then, of course, there'd be negotiations, and they'd give the workers a few cents more an hour, and the workers would think that they'd really got big concessions from the mine owners without realizing it was all a scam. And John L. Lewis, at least according to the book Capitalism and Freedom, John L. Lewis, who headed the United Mine Workers, was working, you know, very, very closely with the owners of the coal mines, not to actually advance the cause of the coal miners, but to advance the cause of the owners of the coal mines. And the average union member had no idea that his leaders were in bed with the mine owners. And really, if you get into the background of the AFL-CIO today, you'll find that it's many of the people who lead the AFL-CIO union organization. Elite group, which represents the corporate interests of our country, the people who own our great corporations, and they meet together. They're all really globalists. They're working towards a common goal, but they can't let the union worker know this. Now, I believe there's a place for unions. I believe, certainly, this concept that, you know, that you need to have a balance between labor and management, but unfortunately, it doesn't really manage. It really isn't a factor today. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you'd like to give us a call and you have any thoughts about what's happening economically in our country or about the coming war with Iran or about the President Ahmadinejad's interview there on 60 Minutes with Scott, I think it was Scott Pelley. Anyway, I would love to hear what your thoughts are. President Ahmadinejad addressed the United Nations today, as did our president, and our president called, of course, Ahmadinejad a terrorist, and his country was responsible for terrorism. And, well, is Iran responsible for terrorism? Is Iran our enemy? Is Iran trying to build nuclear bombs? Are they going to have a bomb any week or two now so that we really have to attack them in the near future? And what will happen if the United States attacks Iran as far as the other Muslim countries throughout the world? Will this be a simple little 3 or 4 or 6 day war like our leaders are telling us? Oh, it's just going to be a cakewalk. But I seem to remember that statement being made in reference to Iraq. I remember, of course, when the president landed a plane, or at least feigned or pretended to land a plane on a carrier, and beneath the banner, mission accomplished, and told the American people we'd won in Iraq, the war was over. Will it be the same way in Iran? Will we be able to defeat the country in 6 or 7 days? I don't think we're going to invade that country. It's much larger. And where will the money come from to replace all of the weapons that we're going to be using? Because we're going to use up most of the armaments we have, the bombs, the cruise missiles, the Tomahawk missiles, things of that sort. I mean, how do you feel about going to war with Iran? It should be obvious to everybody that we're being primed to accept that. When our president calls Iranian is a country responsible for terrorism, and Congress just in this last 48 hours has actually voted to condemn Iran as a terrorist nation, or at least their army unit called the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, as a terrorist organization, and certainly to condemn them for supplying weapons to the Iraqi. Insurgents, but the question is it true? All we know is what we're being told by the same people who told us about Saddam Hussein's weapons of mass destruction. The same people who promised us that they were going to get Osama bin Laden dead or alive, and we were going to end this terrorist war very quickly. We were going to get all those wicked people from Al-Qaeda, and none of these things came to pass. Can we really, of course, trust the people who got us into the mess we are in Iraq with getting us into a war with Iran? And what will happen to the other Muslim nations if we were to go to war with Iran? Well, give us your thoughts. I'd like to know what you think. Our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Zygmunt Brzezinski, who in my estimation is the major architect for everything going on in the Middle East today. He was the National Security Advisor to President Carter back in 1979, when he, of course, toppled the Shah of Iran and brought the Ayatollah Khomeini to power, and for most people do not know. But the Shah of Iran had a secret police organization. It was really very, very ruthless, and much of the opposition to the Shah really arose because of the activities of his secret police, who had actually been recruited and trained by our CIA. And when the Shah was overthrown, primarily because of the brutality and the antagonism of the Iranian people towards the Shah's secret police, and we brought the Ayatollah Khomeini to power and the mullahs, of course, what happened at that time was that the Ayatollah simply incorporated the Shah's secret police into their own, of course, secret police. And that is the origin of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, which just in those last 48 hours has been condemned by our Congress as a terrorist organization. The question I have in my mind, and nobody wants to raise, is what is the relationship between the American Central Intelligence Agency and the modern-day manifestation of the Shah's secret police, which have been recruited and trained by our own intelligence agency? Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Now, when Zygmunt Brzezinski was interviewed within the last 48 hours, he was talking about, of course, how terrible it was that we were thinking of going to war with Iran. He always says the right things when he's out of office. He always does the wrong things when he is in office. If you want to know what he really thinks, you need to get his book, The Grand Chessboard, which was written in 1997, where he simply said that whoever controls, of course, the oil of the Middle East will control the world, because that is the center of the world. And he even talked about the fact that this Islamic terrorist movement was going to occur. Now, this is 1997. But he said they will not be effective. They will not be effective because they will not have a nation to back them. And unless there is a nation behind a terrorist movement, they cannot be effective. Oh, they can bother us a little bit. They can produce some pressure here and there. But, of course, they would never be able to be victorious, because without a national backing and financing, there is no way a terrorist organization could be effective. Well, that of course comes from Zygmunt Brzezinski's book, Grand Chessboard. We recommend that people get it. We don't carry the book, but it is available, I'm sure, on Amazon. And he lays out, of course, the understanding of that we were going to have some sort of perception of a threat to America before you would ever get the American people to be ready to rally behind their government and go to war. We had to create the perception of a direct external threat. And those were the exact words that he used. And so let's go to Lim, who's calling us from... Well, anyway, hi, Lim. How are you doing?
Oh, it's Jim.
Oh, Jim. Okay, fine. Go right ahead. You're calling from 29 Palms?
Yeah.
All right, fine. Well, I guess
my
producer thought it was you maybe have been Oriental or something. Go ahead.
No.
Good to have you with us.
I was reflecting on a book by Hemingway, which he wrote in the 30s, To Have and To Have Not. Are you familiar with it?
No, really not. Uh-huh.
But he described the Depression era and where people were trying to survive. They were worrying about where the next meal was coming from. And the well-to-do were worrying how they were going to do their self in because of the stock market. They were thinking about whether they were going to jump or shoot themselves, you know.
Well, I'll tell you what, an awful lot of great fortunes were made and lost.
Right,
mostly
yeah.
lost, but there were a few people who did.
And
it well.
Seems like history could repeat itself.
I think that it is repeating itself because I think many of the same forces are still at work. That the whole Great Depression was intentionally created by the central bank. It's a privately owned central bank. It's not answerable to the government. And they created the Roaring Twenties. See, the purpose of the central bank or the Federal Reserve System when it was created in 1913 was to give us a stable currency and prevent the boom and bust cycles we'd had in the past. And they did exactly the opposite, of course. They began to expand the money supply. They create money out of nothing. They enrich themselves. They created the Roaring Twenties. And then, of course, when things began to get out of hand in 1929, they contracted the money supply, and they plunged America into a depression. And every time we started to come out of that depression, why, of course, they took more money out. And this was an intentionally created problem. And that's the tragedy. And even though, of course, we had no money to produce here in America, why, they were sending money to Russia, they were sending it to Germany. Why would you do that? Why would you be sending money to Adolf Hitler and to communist Russia in the 1930s when there was no money available to get American industries going? They created that problem, and I think that they've created the coming a collapse of our economy.
With this GM strike, I worked at one time for a steel company here in California.
No, which one, Bethlehem?
It was in Torrance.
Okay.
And they made a lot of ordnance. And what happened was they were going on strike because of the benefits. And one of the supervisors told me, if you guys go on strike, they're going to close this place down. And sure enough, it was like 2 weeks later, they settled a strike, and a year later, they leveled the building.
Right.
And they moved out of state. And it happens, with especially companies with big money.
And, of course, I think this could very well happen with General Motors. They're making their money, and they're making good money in other countries. They're not making it here in the United States. And, of course, I think that they are manipulating the working men here, and I believe that, you know, if they really hold out, why, they may very well close down many more of the plants that they have here in this country. And the workers will be desperate, you know, and they'll eventually go back to work. By that time, the funds of the union will be exhausted, the people will be exhausted, and they will make any concessions that are needed, and I think eventually most of them will lose their jobs here. Because without tariffs, we have no means of protecting ourselves from the competition coming from American plants over in China, owned by General Motors, where they can get the labor at $2 to $3 a day in comparison with $70 an hour here. I mean, if you were an employer, where would you have your factory?
Well, they go where the cheap labor is.
Amen. And that, of course, believe me, there's no loyalty in America, especially when the people who control our government are intent upon destroying the middle class and destroying those good-paying middle-class jobs, and before long, there are not going to be any left. It's all part of it.
Man, look at Mattel.
Yeah.
All their products are now made overseas.
Amen. Amen to that. Hey.
They were in Hawthorne, California, I think.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in a minute. Remember our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Give us a call.
Okay.
Well, Jimmy is still there. Oh, I think we lost Jim. Well, of course, you're out there and you'd like to give us a call. Our number 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a 4-tape or a 4-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that'll protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See HeadacheStayGone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Thierry. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Through the years, it is beginning to fall. They're anticipating a decline in the value of the British pound of about 6% in the next year or so. Now, that's not a lot, but you do that over a 10-year period, and it can have quite a profound effect on the value of the people's savings, their bonds, their pension funds, their insurance policies, wiping out about half the value of everything they have. And then, of course, we find that the French economy is having problems. There's even some problems up in Canada, and even though their currency is fairly strong, a lot of people, of course, are depending upon credit or commercial paper to raise funds to operate factories, and this is how so many factories work, and of course, meant to the commercial paper. Banks and other companies are very, very concerned about commercial paper. They don't know the value, they don't know the pricing of it, and will it be paid back again? There is a growing, of course, a dissolution of liquidity. There is a gradual cutting back, certainly, on the funds that are available for industries, and you go out and you want to borrow money for your business now. Instead of getting it at 6 or 7%, you may be paying 9 or 10% for the money. And so, as we begin to see this whole monetary situation beginning to unwind, and we're just at the very, very beginning of it, why I think that we're in for a very, very bad time. And this is exactly what we can see. And, of course, all we would need to do would be to invade or attack Iran and then maybe lose one of our carriers or something of that sort. And I think that you would find that, you know, the stock market would take a tumble. People would be very, very concerned about investing. And, of course, we could begin to see a real contraction in our monetary system. Well, let's go to Ray, who's calling from Santa Cruz, and again our number 1-888-24 Liberty or 464-8295. Hi, Ray. How are you doing?
Oh, pretty good. I had a question actually about the gold standard.
All right.
Now we got onto the Federal Reserve System in 1931, right?
Right.
Now it was the Bank of International Settlements that was involved in this whole thing. And I don't know who they are, but the name came up. I was reading about something, and I wondered who they were.
All right, fine.
It's England that is involved in this whole caper, you know.
All right, first of all, the Federal Reserve System was created in 1913. The Bank of International Settlements is in Basel, Switzerland. Mm-hmm. It is organized under the auspices of a man named Helmar Schacht, S-C-H-C-H-T, who was Hitler's finance minister, about 1930-31, somewhere in there. And the Bank of International Settlements is the central banker's central bank. In other words, that's where they take care of all their financial transactions between the central banks of the world, which are privately owned banks controlled by a group of financiers who really control the world. And they have this wonderful ability to create money out of nothing. And do you have a copy of Professor Quigley's book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time?
I ought to read it, Bill.
You really ought to get it, or you can simply get our little pamphlet, The History of Money. But, of course, there we simply quote from page 324 of Quigley's book, Professor Quigley's book, where he explains how the central bankers of the world really run the world through secret meetings where they plot to control their respective governments in a feudalistic manner. And those are his words, not mine. Mm. And these are the people who really run the world, and of course, because they can create money out of nothing, then they're able to buy up the media and the corporations and fund the great foundations and run the banks, and it's really a great scam. Now, if you or I could create money out of nothing, we'd be called counterfeiters. The central bankers do it because they control the government. So, but the Bank for International Settlements is the central banker's central bank, and I think it was formed somewhere in the, in the late 20s or very early 30s.
I'm just wondering, because these big corporations like the Ford, Ford and General Motors and all of them, I think we have a system in the United States that's bordering on fascism.
You're absolutely right. We're moving towards a fascist society, a corporate socialist society, where the major corporations control government. Who do you think puts up the $200 million or $300 million that the president uses to run for the presidency? It'll be $300 or $400 million this time. I mean, do you think that that's the average person out there just putting in $1,000 at a time? Mm-hmm. No, it's the people with big money, and of course they have rules for you and I, and they have special rules for the elite.
Yeah.
Hey, hang out there, we'll be back in just a minute with Ray, and then we'll get to Mike. And our telephone number again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Well, this is Arthur Stanback here at Radio Liberty. We, of course, look forward to your calls. If you want to give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And yeah, we do have a ruling elite, and this is what's so very difficult for people to understand. But behind this ruling elite are very powerful spiritual forces. And until people understand that, and one reason that these people have amassed the tremendous fortunes that they have is because, of course, they have an allegiance to a different God. And many of these people actually have fallen into these occult practices described by Rhonda Burns in her book and DVD, The Secret, where they actually are able, by concentration and meditation, to conjure up all sorts of spiritual help for their purposes. And when you begin to get into the background of J.P. Morgan, who was involved in spiritualism, and Henry Ford, who was involved in theosophy and spiritualism, and the Rockefellers family has been involved with the occult, and so many of our leaders, people like Nixon and Reagan and FDR, and were all involved in astrology. But people, you see, the average person doesn't really understand that this aspect of what's
going on.
Perhaps
they don't want to.
People don't like to. We have our heroes would like to believe that everything is as we believe it is, but unfortunately we're involved in a spiritual battle and we're being intentionally deceived.
I have one more question. Now, they expropriated the Jewish property during World War II.
Right.
And I'm just wondering, now, there must be millions and millions of dollars in Switzerland and accounts in Switzerland of some kind that that never were, you know, they were never the money was never returned to the people that really deserved it.
Well, I'll tell you what happened. It was a few years ago, and a man named Brofman, he's one of the...
I've heard of him.
All right, fine. Well, Brofman brought a suit against the Swiss banks. And it recovered, I think it was $6 or $8 billion. It was to be returned to the survivors of the Holocaust or their families of those people where the Swiss banks had appropriated the money. And Brofman got the money, and then he just decided not to give it to the members. And, of course, there's an outcry from many of the survivors of the Holocaust. And Brofman says, oh, gee, I never got around to distributing all that money that we got from the Swiss bank.
Edgar Brofman is a key figure in this so-called this conspiracy that I was reading about, the Committee of 300 and the Round Table and all that. He's involved in some big time...
Well, I think he's involved. How he's involved, I can't tell you.
Yeah.
He is certainly involved, and hang on there, Ray. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. This is Open Line Tuesday. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And Ray had asked about the money that was many of the Jewish families had over in the Swiss banks. You know, the people in Germany, and of course many of them were killed during the Holocaust, but a few of them survived, and their families have survived. And we were just pointing out that Edgar Brofman of the Seagram's whiskey, a fortune, a multi-billionaire, had brought a suit because he was so concerned about the money that had been stolen from the Holocaust survivors. He brought a suit against the Swiss banks, and they finally agreed to about $6 billion in compensation for all the money that had been stolen from the Holocaust survivors. And then, at least according to Barry Shamus, who's a frequent guest on our program, after Edgar Brofman got that $6 or $8 billion, he just hung on to it. He said he couldn't figure out who to give it to, so he was just going to hold it for good purposes. And that's how the world system really worked. Anything else, Ray?
Yeah, have you ever heard of a fellow named... Max Fisher?
No, I really haven't.
Well, he was the head of United Brands Fruit Company, and apparently he had a big to do with the Warren Commission. That's just a theory of somebody's, but just threw the name out there because I thought you might know.
No, can't help you with him. Sorry. Mm. Okay, anything else, Ray?
Okay, that's it.
All right, fine. Well, thanks very much. Let's go to Mike. And again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you have a question, a comment, something you'd like to talk about, whether it's on finance, whether it's about the possibility of a war with Iran and what that would mean to you And if you think that we can go over there and kill a few thousand or 100,000 or a million people over in Iran and there'll be no repercussions in the United States, I think you're very, very foolish. Well, Mike, did you have a question?
Well, a few comments, actually.
All right, fine.
Regarding Switzerland, I didn't intend to talk about that, but you know, Switzerland always claimed neutrality in World War II and I believe also World War I. In my estimation, the wars were actually orchestrated from Switzerland. And one point I like to bring up to...
Well, now, do you have any proof of that at all, or is that just an opinion?
Well, it's what I was about to say was, just look who ended up with the gold.
All right.
I'd like to just move on from there, though.
All right, fine. Go ahead.
This Iraq-Iran thing is a little odd. I've noticed how, you know, years ago we helped Iraq fight Iran. And I guess the Russians were helping Iran fight Iraq. And now Iran is helping Iraq fight us, supposedly.
All right, but don't forget that it was during the Iran-Iraq War when we were supplied Saddam with the mechanism for and the equipment for making his chemical warfare. In fact, some people claim we actually sent him many chemical warfare agents, which was actually what was blown up when they blew up the bunkers there, in Iraq. But be that as it may, I've actually talked to a gentleman who claimed to be with the special forces who had actually sent over to help Saddam's forces use the chemical weapons on the Iranians in violation of all international treaties. Of course, he could never, come up forward and say that because, of course, he has signed all sorts of secrecy agreements. But we did actually interview him on one of our programs. But you have to understand, although we were backing Saddam Hussein, we were backing Iraq and providing them with weapons and intelligence, we were also backing Iran. And remember, of course, we had given Iran a great deal of access to weapons after the October surprise agreements, the agreement between George Herbert Walker Bush and the Iranian government, where they promised not to release the hostages. The American hostages were being held until the very day that Ronald Reagan became president, so we had to give them those supplies. And then, as part of the Iran-Contra debacle, why we were supplying weapons to Iran as well. So we were financing and supplying weapons to both Iran and Iraq during the Iran-Iraq War.
Yeah. Well, now, I go on trying to figure out our country and how they do things. I love my country. I even love my government. I don't like this cabal that's taken over. And looking at the way the Iraqis were drawn out in Gulf War I, as it opened, as the trouble began, when they were suckered into Kuwait, and then when their army, they call it the Republican Guard, I believe, was strung out on the highway there.
No, that was not the Republican. Well, all right, go ahead. Maybe it was the Republican
Guard,
just, right?
We slaughtered them,
right,
as they were retreating.
That was known as the Highway of Death. Right,
right. And that all of this, we drew them out to where they were sitting ducks, and then slaughtered them. And all this was for the sake of conquering Iraq. We didn't
try to conquer Iraq at that time, Mike. We did was just slaughter a lot of people. And we'd actually encouraged Saddam Hussein to go into Kuwait, and anybody doubts that, we have an article from the Washington Post that tells how April Gillespie, who was the American ambassador to Iraq prior to the Kuwait War, had actually encouraged Saddam to go into Kuwait, telling him that we weren't concerned whether he attacked them or not. So we had encouraged Saddam to invade, and once he did, now we had the justification for a war. And there's a wonderful book written by Woodward, and I believe Bob Woodward. I think it's called Five Presidents or Six Presidents, and he tells about the meeting in the White House and the Oval Office when Brent Sokraft was there. Certainly James Baker III, George Bush, I've forgotten who the fourth person was, and this is George Herbert Walker Bush, and they wanted actually to go and tell Saddam, look, you pull out of Kuwait or we're going to send our military in. And George Bush said, no, you can't go over and negotiate with Saddam Hussein and get him to pull his troops out of Kuwait. We have to have this war. That was the words that were used. We have to have this war. This was, of course, in 1990 this occurred. So instead of going over and giving Saddam an opportunity to pull his troops out, why they, George Herbert Walker Bush said, we have to have this war, and you have to wonder what he's talking about. Why did we have to have a war? Well, I hope that anybody would like the reference on that. We actually have it. I believe, of course, everything is following a timetable. And I believe there is a timetable that is drawing America into this coming war with Iran. And everything is just following one step at a time. But go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, well, I was looking at that, those events as being the beginning of the process of conquering Iraq. We, you know, the war then, the Gulf War I never really ended. We continued with the presence and bombing and flying over and basically controlling the country.
Right.
Until we finally had 9-1-1, which was a false pretext for the invasion we're looking at now, which is just a whole lot more murdering. And so I've been looking at World War II and the way we suckered the Japanese into the attack on Pearl Harbor so they would fire the first shot. They were just set up with old ships that were left in the harbor for them to go bombing and strafing and sinking. And while the good equipment was out at sea.
Now you're talking about the aircraft carriers that had all been pulled out, and they left the battleships there, which of course were World I vintage, and they knew would not be were certainly not that important militarily. Aircraft carriers were. That's why they pulled the aircraft carriers out of Pearl Harbor and left the battleships there.
Yeah. So we drew them out into the Pacific, where they would be a lot easier to beat. Easier out in the ocean than on their homeland. And all of this was for the sake of conquering Japan. You know, I couldn't stop with just the idea that FDR did all this for the sake of just having a war. There had to be an end, which was a fascist economic domination of Japan. After the war, we went in and we did this rebuilding number that we always hear our presidents talking about. Even Bill Clinton, before the bombing of Kosovo, he was talking about, he was giving us all these great reassurances that we were going to rebuild Kosovo afterwards. Well, and the same thing with Iraq now. And you just get this idea, eventually, after looking at this repeat itself over and over again, that we just go and obliterate whatever we want to obliterate, and then we go back in and rebuild the way we want it.
But I think what you have to understand, Mike, is that the ultimate goal has always been an American empire. And this is why you have to have wars if you're going to have an empire, and of course most Americans had never stopped and think that we have today over 720 foreign bases. We have troops stationed in 130 to 140 nations. We continue occupying both Germany and Japan and South Korea long after those wars were over, and you're absolutely right. I believe all of these things are done very intentionally, but we cannot let the American people know that there really is a small group working out of Washington, D.C., who believe in an American empire as a stepping stone towards this new world order. Of course, once everything is in place, then it'll be all right to destroy America, and instead of America dominating the world, it will be the world government. Make another point, and then I'm going to have to let you go.
Well, that's pretty much it for now. I'm just working on developing this idea of what happened in Japan.
Well, we can talk more about it some other time, but there's so much more to the story that the fact that the Japanese had been trying to surrender for 6 months before we dropped the bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and of course the invasion of Okinawa and of Iwo Jima, totally unnecessarily militarily, and anybody who would challenge that statement, you give us a call or drop us a note, and we'll send you an article that appeared in the Chicago Tribune on, I believe, August 15th, 1945, pointing out the Japanese had been trying for 6 months to surrender, and we wouldn't let them. Thanks so much, Mike.
Okay.
And let's go to Mike calling from Coeur d'Alene. Go ahead, Mike.
Hi, Dr. Stan. Thanks for taking the call.
Go ahead.
I would like to ask about Israel. It seems like lately, you know, you can't say anything about Israel. It's a very touchy subject. The question I have is about supporting Israel, using the Bible as the means. Those who will bless you, I will bless, and those who curse you, I will curse. And it seems like everybody uses that verse in the Bible
right.
to continue the support of arms shipment to Israel, financial distributions through the IMF and through the UN to Israel from the United States. I just want a question. Is that Israel the one we're supposed to be helping financially?
Well, I don't think that, Chris, that God needs our help as far as maintaining Israel. I believe that the people he wants to maintain, he will maintain. I believe, of course, that God plays a part in bringing the people back to the Holy Land, but I believe that the current rulers of Israel are simply not noble people. I believe there's some very wicked people who are working within the upper echelons of labor Zionism who have an entirely different agenda. Did you ever stop to think that maybe, just maybe, they want to kill off as many Jews as they can, and that's why they wanted to get them all into Israel? Did that thought ever cross your mind?
Not so.
Well, I believe, of course, that what is taking place, I believe, certainly God has a hand in. I believe that he certainly brought the true Jews back, but I believe there are a lot of people who come back who certainly do not believe in the Bible at all, do not believe in the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And so you got a mixed bag over in Israel. But I don't think it's up to us to provide financing for Israel, because when we do, then we allow the wicked people in Washington, D.C. to dictate the policies of the Israeli government. And right now, we have forced the Israelis to give up most of the land that they had won in a series of wars, to the point where Israel is totally indefensible at the present time. And without divine intervention, if we have another war over there, I think there's going to be a mass slaughter of the Jews.
Well, that's the whole point I've been mentioning. You know, if we give money to somebody, that comes with a whole lot of strings attached.
Absolutely, but you see,
say if we don't give our money to them, then we're not blessing them, and so God's going to be angry with us. Yeah. And I said, well, what if we withheld our money, and we didn't give it to the PLO, and we didn't give it to the Turks, and we didn't give it to all these other organizations or Saudis,
and we didn't give it to the Egyptians. We're giving the Egyptians $3 billion a year as they're preparing, using that money to prepare for war with Israel. Nothing as it appears to be, Mike. Once you understand that, everything makes sense.
Huh.
Okay.
So if we were to withhold the money, then we would actually be blessing them, because we wouldn't be funding their enemies as well.
Well, the thing is that what we are setting this whole of the Near East and the Middle East up for a terrible war, and I think there's going to be terrible suffering in Israel. And I think it's going to be fascinating, frightening as this thing unfolds. Anyway, we'll know a lot more in the very near future.
Yes.
God bless, and thanks so much
for
calling.
Well,
let's go to Jack calling from Michigan. Again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Jack, do you have a question? Jack, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm here, Dr.
Smith. Okay, go ahead.
I don't know if it's a question. I was wondering if you were aware of the fact that when the bookkeeping entries of the bank prove that the borrower, the contracting borrowing party's own loan agreement, funds the loan to the borrower,
mm-hmm.
and that the bookkeeping entries of the bank prove that the bankers, are simply functioning as a money changer. They're exchanging one form of currency for another form of currency.
Well, I think basically what Jack is basically saying is, let's say you want to go, to borrow $100,000 from the bank, you take in $10,000, you want to borrow $90,000. The bank then takes your $10,000, and then, of course, you have to give them a mortgage on the house, so that becomes an asset for the bank. I mean, they've got this asset of $90,000 that they have lent you, and it's covered by the value of the house. Then, of course, they have the $10,000, and now, of course, since they have that $10,000, they can lend out another $100,000 because it's a fractional reserve system. So I think people have to understand this is one of the greatest sleight of hand systems in the whole world. It's all smoke and mirrors, and you and I work very hard for our money, and the bank's created out of nothing. Go ahead, Jack.
Yeah, and there's a little more. Does the contract that I might sign is a promissory note,
right,
which the bank then converts into a negotiable instrument, which they then actually record as an asset of the bank, and it's sold to an investor seeking interest.
They can actually do that. They can either hold it themselves, or probably more commonly than not, they will actually sell that mortgage to somebody else, and then you will pay the other company. And of course, this is what they're doing. This is how they created the bonds that were in so much trouble with the collateralized debt obligations, CDOs, where they actually bundled large numbers of these mortgages, which would be fine if they were legitimate mortgages, but many of them are subprime. Certainly the people that are not first-class borrowers, and a lot of them simply are not paying their mortgages, and suddenly a lot of these debt obligations are worth 25 cents on the dollar. And hang on there. Well, go ahead, Jack. Did you have anything else you wanted to say?
Yeah, in fact, one signature on the promissory note makes it money according to the Uniform Commercial Code. And the bank actually creates an account that would contain this money that the contracting borrower gave them, because their signature made it money.
No, it doesn't, not really money, it's credit, but
well,
it's made.
Yeah. Well, actually, they say it's a form of currency. It says that it involves two. There's legal tender currency, as we all know, Federal Reserve notes. Then there's the non-legal tender currency, which is checks, line of credits, credit cards that emanate from the bank. But it turns out that according to the Federal Reserve policies and procedures and the generally accepted accounting principles imposed upon all federally insured banks, Title 12, USC.
You're getting off into a lot of things that way over people's
heads.
What's the point you'd like to make?
It prohibits them, Dr. Stan.
All right.
Prohibits them, according to all that stuff, prohibits the banks from lending their own currency from their own assets or from other depositors.
Okay, fine. Thanks so much, Jack. And, of course, Jack's getting a little into other things, but this really is sort of a scam. And then, of course, the banks have actually able to create these mortgages and then sell those mortgages, and they get a percentage. And this thing, of course, what's happened is you have a lot of the non-performing mortgages called collateralized debt obligations that, of course, have been sold to pension funds and insurance funds and hedge funds throughout the world, and even to banks and other financial institutions that may only be worth 25 to 50 cents of the value that was paid. We're talking about literally hundreds of millions of dollars in loans, and we don't know how much money there is out there, but probably well over $1 trillion in faulty collateralized debt obligations, and of course somebody's going to have to bear the brunt of all that money that's going to be lost. And this is why so many of our financial institutions are afraid to loan, because they don't know how much money they have. They hold all of these bonds and they have no idea what they're worth. And so we have a very, very real problem today that is sweeping across the world. Well, now, Chris, will this get straightened out? Well, unfortunately, we're in a terrible situation because we have rampant inflation. We have the inflation rate. Banks have just turned on the money spigot, and I really fear, of course, that we're heading towards hyperinflation throughout the Western world today. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course, we always enjoy our open line programs. And we always invite you, if you have questions, to give us a call. We want to remind you that we are holding an all-day conference on the 28th of October at the Aptos Seascott Golf Course. We're going to have a great lineup of speakers. We do hope that many of you will be able to come. And if you're coming from outside the area, you've only got a few more days to be able to get the special rate on the hotel rooms. But otherwise, you can come and get your hotel room on your own. Our telephone number, if you'd like to make a reservation, is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. We're going to start at 8 in the morning and go to 5, 5:30 in the evening. And, of course, we'll be serving lunch. So we need to know whether you're going to be there. And then, of course, we do hope that many of you out there in the listening audience will want to get some of the material that will help you better to understand what's going on, because so much of what's going on really doesn't make sense. Especially the fact that we went to war with Afghanistan because we wanted to get to Osama bin Laden. And when it turned out Osama bin Laden wasn't there, had escaped, why we just kept our troops there. Now, the idea is that we're fighting the Taliban, but everybody's forgotten. We were the major financiers of the Taliban right up until 2001, and you read any of the books that were written at that time, or even the president's speech on the 20th September 2001, where he'd tell you we were the largest source of humanitarian aid for Afghanistan at that time, and that was the Taliban. Now, why were we financing the Taliban, who were, of course, giving sanctuary to the wicked Saddam Hussein? Pardon me, to the wicked Osama bin Laden. So nothing going on really makes sense. And then from Afghanistan, we're going to go to war with Iraq. From Iraq, we're talking about going to war with Iran. And if you read the recent article by Zbigniew Brzezinski, his comment was, if we get into the war with Iran, we're going to be tied up with a war with Iraq and Afghanistan and Pakistan for 20 years. Why would we be at war with Pakistan? Why, very, very simply, because Pakistan now has a very, very large component of people who have embraced this radical form of Islam. And why is that? Why, because back in the 1980s, pardon me, and the 1990s, the United States was distributing textbooks to all the madras schools over there that were pushing this radical form of Islam. And if you doubt that, we'll be glad to send you an article out of the Washington Post called The ABCs of Jihad, pointing out that the United States Agency for International Development had actually spent $51 million on textbooks that were encouraging the radical Islamic movement. And, of course, if you get into the background of the radical Islamic movement, we carry a book called The Devil's Game. You'll find out that the Muslim Brotherhood and most of the entire radical Islamic movement was funded by your own intelligence agencies. Why? Because you wanted an enemy. You have to have an enemy. This is one of the oldest techniques in the world, but unfortunately, it's a very, very dangerous game they're playing. It's called the Devil's Game. Where did Hamas come from, this radical Palestinian movement? It was funded by Israel and the CIA, with the help of other intelligence agencies. Where did Al-Qaeda come from? It was funded by our good friends in Saudi Arabia and in Pakistan and the American CIA. And if you get our little pamphlet, there are three pamphlets called $4 911, you'll get all of the documentation for everything I'm saying here. If you'd like a copy of that article, out of the Washington Post, on how we actually financed the textbooks that converted Pakistan from a secular society into a radical Islamic society that now threatens to seize control of that government. And, of course, if that government is seized, we're going to have to send our troops in there to keep the radical Islamic movement from gaining control to the missiles and nuclear weapons that Pakistan possesses today. Incidentally, those nuclear weapons, at least according to some people, were actually created under the auspices of the CIA that helped Mr. Khan, the Pakistani scientist, develop the nuclear weapons that now threaten the peace of the Middle East. And we'll be back in just a moment here. Thank you. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views and, well, the views of our guests. And so right now our guest is Patrick Wood of the August Review. And Patrick has been involved in what's going on for many, many years, certainly in the late 1970s. He worked very closely with Professor Anthony Sutton, bringing out the truth about the Trilateral Commission. And certainly in the 1970s, most people had never heard of the Trilateral Commission. It was organized in 1973, and the purpose was to take over control of the government of the United States so that they would then be able to take over the financial and commercial interests of the rest of the world. That was the stated purpose, at least according to Barry Goldwater in his book, With No Apologies, and that's exactly what they have done. Well, Patrick Wood and Professor Sutton wrote a series of books on the trilateralists over Washington, and of course, Patrick has been involved ever since then, trying to let the American people, the people throughout the world, realize that there really are forces working behind the scenes that make mockery of the democratic process, that dominate both political parties, a people of great wealth and certainly great power who have a different world view. Go ahead, Patrick. It's good to have you with us.
Well, good evening, Dr. Stan. Thank you for having me back again.
All right, fine. Well, what would you like to talk about? Would you like to talk about something, some of the latest articles you've written? What would you like to talk about?
Well, I'll tell you what, some of the things that are on my mind this week in particular are centered in the Mideast. And I thought it might make an interesting show to discuss some of these issues, things that have been in the news. And globalization is a global thing.
All right, fine. You go right ahead then.
And, you know, it escapes most people when you talk about globalization, but it has to do with the world in general, not just the United States. And we're getting bit by globalization right now, personally, but there's things going on in the rest of the world I think that are very important to watch and to understand as well. And one of the big things in the news this last week were some transactions that took place that concerned countries in the United Arab Emirates in the Mideast. And it's just interesting things. If you were to ask 10 people what the richest city in the world was, I'm not sure what answers you'd get. Maybe New York, maybe Paris, maybe London.
How about someplace in Dubai?
Well, Dubai in particular is the richest city in the world today.
Right.
And the second richest city in the world the second richest city in the world is Dubai. Abu Dhabi, which is a two-hour drive from there, is actually the richest city in the world today now. And so within a two-hour drive, you know, separating two cities, you have the two richest cities in the world that are competing back and forth for the title. And if you were to go to a search engine on the Internet like Google and search images for Abu Dhabi or Dubai, you would find an incredible panorama of wealth, just dripping with wealth.
Yeah, of course.
Unbelievable what they're doing.
Dubai, simply this last week, was buying up part of Carlyle Corporation, International Corporation, buying up part of the NASDAQ Stock Exchange. I believe that they were going to buy part of the London Stock Exchange. They've got so much money, and they're simply following that old slogan, buy American. And if we don't watch out, they're going to buy up most of America. They've got all this oil and natural gas money. So Pat is pointing out that they've tremendous wealth is being centralized in the Arab countries, and of course people who come from a different religious point of view, but of course are quite willing to purchase the wealth of America. Go right ahead, Patrick.
Well, you're exactly right. What has been in the news this last week is that Abu Dhabi, and you have to remember that these cities and these countries are actually owned and operated and run by a royal family in each of these countries. So in Abu Dhabi, for instance, there is a crown prince who basically is the head of the family that owns the whole shooting match. And the same thing's true for Dubai. And just this last week, it was announced that Carlyle is selling a significant stake in its investment company to Abu Dhabi. And at the same time, Dubai announced that it was buying 20% of the NASDAQ stock exchange in the United States, which also includes a good stake in the London Stock Exchange as well. And so you see these billions of dollars are being, you know, thrown around to make purchases like this. And it just makes you want to take a look at the country. Like, where on earth do they get the kind of money and the brass to make these kinds of purchases? And what is their, you know, what is their end goal? I've looked at this for some time. I haven't written anything in particular on it, but I've looked at it. And there's a really, there's just a fascinating phenomenon taking place. And I think this is probably the essence of globalism is taking place in the United Arab Emirates. The free trade zones, Dr. Stamm, that have been set up over there for foreign corporations to headquarter and make regional headquarters there in those cities, it's attracting money and investment for this reason. These free trade zones that they're setting up are very interesting, and they're very different than the free trade zones we have here in the United States. But let me read you, this is right off of the Chamber of Commerce and Industry in Abu Dhabi. Let me read how they set up their free trade zones. Number one, anybody who locates there you can have 100% foreign ownership of whatever you build. There's no corporate taxes for 15 years, and that can be renewed. There's 100% repatriation of capital and profits from other countries. In other words, you can drag anything back and pay no taxes. There's no personal income taxes, and there are no currency restrictions. And basically what this means is a 100% free ride. And so companies around the world are flocking there, abandoning their home countries, like the United States. For instance, Halliburton, earlier this year, moved its headquarters from Houston, Texas, where it had been a pillar.
Hold on, Dr. Brackner, in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Cindy Patrick is talking about Abu Dhabi and Dubai, two of the wealthiest cities in the world. And really what is so unique about these cities is that they are encouraging corporations to come there. There are no corporate taxes. There are no income taxes. You can take your money in. You can take your money out. And, of course, what they're doing is encouraging the free enterprise system, as we once did here in America before we began having such heavy taxes being imposed, so we could, of course, have a great army, so we could dominate the world as soon as our leaders could. Taxes destroy individual incentive. There's no reason to have the massive tax base we do. America survived very well without a tax base for 120, 130 years until the income tax came along in 1913. But, of course, now, of course, more and more of our corporations are leaving America and going elsewhere, and they're going to go to the areas where there are not massive corporate taxes, where you can keep what you earn. And, of course, so this is what's happening in the Arab countries. They're not taxing you. They have enough money. They don't need to tax you. They don't need to take what you have. And this may be very well the next great economic center of the world. Go ahead, pick up the story.
Well, that's exactly right, and that's exactly what's happening right now. The money of the world is accumulating in the Mideast, and a lot of it, in particular, in Dubai and Abu Dhabi. One of the biggest evidences of this trend was the corporate headquarters of Halliburton being moved from Houston, Texas, to Dubai earlier this year. I think it was in March of this year, and there was a great outcry at the time that Halliburton, being the company that Vice President Dick Cheney ran from 1995 to 2000, Halliburton had received many sole source bids, you know, for the contracting and so on in the war in Iraq.
I think they called them sweetheart deals.
Sweetheart deals.
God bid contracts, massive, billions and billions and billions of dollars.
Exactly.
But the Halliburton, and of course, remember that Dick Cheney was, and I don't know if he still is, but for many years after he became vice president, he was getting something they call a deferred salary. I think other people might call it a bribe, but go right ahead.
Well, we could. Well, Halliburton moved in any case, and there was a great outcry at the time that you know, Halliburton had just basically ripped our government off for, you know, a few hundred billion dollars over there, or $1 million rather, and so now they basically relocating everything they have in Dubai. And where they likely will pay no income taxes, and they're going to be out of the reach of the American tax system here.
And, of course, they violated many of our laws. Certainly they were trading with Iran long after you know, it became illegal to for our corporations to trade with Iran. They set up some shell companies, but they were simply shell companies to actually cover for their illegal actions. But now they're over in Dubai. We can't touch them.
That's right. We can't do a thing about it. And it's also interesting that in Dubai right now, there's some actual projects under construction right now are totaling something like $200 billion. When I say construction, it's just all kinds of construction and luxury beyond belief. We've never seen anything like it in this country. We have no frame of reference in this country whatsoever as to the type of luxury that they're, you know, that they're using over there. But if you look at it, you think, you know, wow, this city was nothing 50 years ago. It was just sand dunes.
Well, I think about it, but it's interesting. They built some of the most beautiful, I mean, hotels and resorts in the entire world in Dubai. And, of course, the whole idea was that one day they were going to run out of natural gas to sell, and so they wanted to have an alternative. And these are magnificent. I mean, you can buy these most beautiful condominiums. They built whole islands there. And, of course, they are putting all these beachside homes in. You know, a beachside home costs $2 million, and people from all over the world are flocking to that area so that they can actually have their summer homes or winter homes or whatever it be in Dubai. I mean, they are putting in literally tens of thousands of these oceanside condominiums, luxury homes that, you know, several million dollars each.
Exactly. Now, one of the twists of this, just to kind of tie this full circle here, one of the first things that Halliburton did was to, when it moved, was to apply for membership on the Dubai Stock Exchange, which is making a move to become the largest regional stock exchange in that area, and they have, and hence their interest in buying a stake in the NASDAQ Stock Exchange as well as the London Stock Exchange. The problem with this, if you read between the lines, is that the Dubai Stock Exchange does not have anywhere near the same restrictions and regulations as the NASDAQ does and as the New York Stock Exchange does. So, for instance, our Securities and Exchange Commission over the years has monitored corporate activity with an eye to keeping everything on the table, to keeping accounting systems legitimate, to keeping the executives of companies, honest, if you will. And we have had one of the greatest standards of financial accountability in the world in our country. What's happening with this interchange of ownership of the stock exchanges are that companies from outside the United States are seeking to be listed now on our stock exchanges, but they're not held accountable to the same standards that American companies have been held because they're overseas companies. There's no way that we can monitor those companies to ensure that they've done the right thing with their money and that they're playing with a full deck, or at least not a cheater deck. So one of the first things that Halliburton did in any case was to register their stock with the Dubai Stock Exchange. And so the money of the world is accumulating in this small, very, very small area of the world. The province or the emirate of Abu Dhabi is about the size of West Virginia. The Dubai, the emirate of Dubai, is only about the size of New Jersey. They're extremely small countries. Yet they are, you know, considered like the wealthiest city, and hence almost the wealthiest country as well, if you take it acre by acre at least. Probably some of the just absolute wealthiest real estate on planet Earth. We see this movement happening throughout the financial institutions, companies like Halliburton, but also the banks like J.P. Morgan. You know, the big banking firms, Salomon Brothers, and so on. They're all establishing regional headquarters in Dubai or Abu Dhabi, and the main purpose is to get into these financial free trade zones where they can operate with impunity in moving money and profits around the world with absolutely no accountability. Is probably one of the most frightening things, Dr. Stan, that we have seen, at least you and I have seen in the last 50 years that we've been looking at this kind of stuff, is absolutely frightening what these people might be doing a few years from now.
Well, what do you anticipate is going to happen, Patrick? Certainly, you would anticipate that these people would want to have a hand over there, hopefully get some of the banking business. But, of course, are we going to be able to maintain a solvent world financial system when so many of the countries are massively increasing their currency supplies, creating a fiat money system? I mean, some countries are increasing their currency in circulation 10, 12, 15, 20, even up to 40%, I think, in Russia. I think in Russia is increasing their currency in circulation 40%. Highly inflationary. It works very well for a time. Yeah, everybody's very prosperous, but eventually the whole thing ends up collapsing because there's no instance in all history where a fiat money system has survived. The question is, are they going to have a valid monetary system over there in Dubai, which is tied to commodities, preferably gold or silver or both, so that you will have a currency that will not be destroyed by the ravages of inflation? That is the $64,000 question, because obviously the world financial system is headed towards the reef of which will cause it to destroy.
Exactly. There's something odd about this whole thing too, Dr. Stan, and that is that these countries are still 100% Muslim. They are completely sold over to the Islamic religion. They are, in much of their doctrine, continue to be hostile towards the United States and towards Israel, of course. They're run by what appear to be, benevolent dictators right now, but nevertheless, they're, it's just a king and a crown prince or whatever.
But of course, ordinarily the king, requires very heavy taxes from his subjects. Here, the princes are not requiring any taxes at all. This is the difference between what you're seeing in the Muslim countries and what you see in other countries. When you offer people stability, when you offer them the opportunity to work and not have to pay a large taxes to the government, you're going to draw people from all over the world. In fact, the latest Richard Mayberry early warning report talks about just what you're talking about, pointing out, of course, that in Muslim countries, Christians and Jews are required to pay a tax. If you are a Muslim, you don't pay any taxes. If you're a Christian, a Jew, you pay a tax of 10%. Gee, I wish I could get by with paying a 10% tax here in the United States. And of course, what they're doing is making the Muslim countries far more attractive than the so-called Christian countries, where we have a ruling elite that is oppressing the people with massive confiscatory taxation, federal taxes, state taxes, local taxes, sales taxes, gasoline taxes, and you go down the line, they're going to tax everything away from people as long as they can. So, Patrick, what's your thought?
Well, here we are back with looking at these two little countries in the Mideast and all the money that's flowing over there, and the tax-free free trade zones that are being set up and so on. What's interesting to me is that how easily all of these Western companies get along with Islamic dictators who appear to be sold out to luxury, unbridled luxury, unbridled sensuality, if you will, not so much in a sexual sense, but that goes on there too, but just in appeasement of all the senses. This is so antithetic to what we're being fed in the press, with the war against terror and what's going on in Iraq and in Afghanistan. And we see these war-torn regions and the faces of the children and stuff, and we get this idea, that most people have this idea that the entire Mideast is that way, and my gosh, how could anybody get along with any of those people over there? Yet the big moneyed people, the world moneyed people, get along famously with these Islamic dictators, and they're completely in bed with them. I'm not sure what to make of this yet, but it seems to me to be an oxymoron on the surface of it. But alas, it isn't. It really isn't, because that is the reality of it. They are in bed with each other. The question is, I suppose, how far in bed are they with each other? Do they have a joint plan? Certainly these crown princes are getting even more filthy, stinking rich than they were before with just the oil. It's not that they need the taxes, but they're making their money somehow. Where are they making the money? Where's the partnerships here that are, where they're making the money as well, like companies like Halliburton? They're going over there, but the crown prince invite them over there, if you will, give them the free trade zone. They're getting something out of it. They are.
Well, of course, that's not on the taxes. Table. Of course, that's the biggest thing. If you can go over there and not pay any taxes, either there or in the United States, and by abandoning in the United States, now they'll be able to multiply their profits tremendously.
Exactly. So the question is, I guess, it's kind of a horse and cart issue. Which came first? When oil was discovered in the late 1950s in that area. Every drop of oil was explored, drilled, piped, and sold and marketed by Western firms. These countries had no technology whatsoever. They're basically just riding camels and around the desert. That's about all they did. And so all of the technology that they had that got them rich in the first place came from Western interests. And it would seem today that most everything that's made possible over there is made possible because of Western interests. And so they're able, companies like Halliburton and J.P. Morgan and so on are able to pretty much write their own ticket or cause their own ticket to be written with these Islamic dictators. And they make the sweetheart deals where they can, slip in over there and have completely free reign to do basically whatever they want to do in the world, with no checks or balances whatsoever, no accountability, no financial accountability. And in the end, what this is doing is sucking the United States dry, what's left of us. They're sucking money out of here. We see the money showing up on the other side of the planet.
Now hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, of course, Patrick is pointing out that so much of our money is being sent out of this country, and our money is going all over the world. Now, other countries own between $2.5 and $3 trillion of money, American money. They're holding American dollars or reinvesting it in bonds. I think somebody said they held about $3 billion in bonds or a couple of billion dollars in bonds. Then, of course, they bought an awful lot of our stocks, a lot of our corporations. Other countries are buying up America at the present time. And our government is doing everything they can to encourage the distribution or the redistribution of our wealth. This is what people find it so hard to believe, but other companies are coming in, whether they be European companies or certainly Arab countries, and buying up the infrastructure of our society. And this is all part of the plan. This is how we'll get equitable, a distribution of wealth within nations and between nations. And so people of great wealth are buying up the infrastructure of our society, and our states are selling it off because they don't have enough money to pay off all their obligations, their pension obligations, and so they simply sell off the Chicago Skyway or the New Jersey Turnpike or the Ohio Turnpike this year to raise the money so they don't have to raise taxes. But what are they going to sell off next year and the year after that? Go right ahead, Patrick.
Exactly. Well, I think I want to just turn the view a little bit towards currency now, since you mentioned that a few minutes ago. And you mentioned gold as well a few minutes ago. One of the things that that I've been looking at for some time, I don't have very many concrete answers yet, but I've been trying to do some trace and stuff on where monetized gold exists in the world today. That is those famous 400-ounce gold bricks that have long been used for settling international debts between countries. And you may remember a gentleman many years ago, Dr. Stan, by the name of Edward Durrell, who was a retired industrialist in the 1970s, and he spent the latter part of his life and much of his fortune trying to find out where the United States Treasury's gold had gone, and he tried to force an audit of Fort Knox. He was never successful. He tried to force an audit of the New York Fed. He was unsuccessful. But by his by much of his research, he had figured that that much of the gold was gone from Fort Knox, that it had been moved to the New York Fed, and that the New York Fed likely had sold much of it off. Now, the reason the Fed had the right to take the gold is because of the debt that the United States government owed to the Fed, and the gold was used as collateral against that debt. So the Fed had a right to take it in one sense, in kind of a twisted sense, they had a right to take it. But the central banks of the world have been selling off gold for many years, 25 years now. They've been net sellers of gold, heavy net sellers of gold. And these gold bricks don't get melted down, in, for jewelry and earrings and rings and stuff like that. There's plenty of current gold production for those types of things. But the monetized gold, the massive, massive amounts of monetized gold, exist somewhere in time and space on planet Earth. We know that. The question is, who's been buying it and accumulating over the last 25 to 30 years? We don't have any absolute positive concrete answers in that, Dr. Stan. However, there's two countries, there's two types of people on the earth that just absolutely love gold. One are the people in India, and the other are the people in the Mideast. Gold has been a standard of currency in the Mideast for, ever since the Mideast existed. And with the massive, massive amounts of wealth that they've had over the decades, it's very likely that a lot of this gold has been accumulated by these sheiks, by these crown princes, etc., by these families. And it's very likely that one day the gold will be trotted out to use as a base for a new currency or some kind of a new currency system when the fiat system that we have in the world today completely breaks. And you and I both know it will break someday. It has to.
I think it's in the process of breaking right now, and I think that the leaders of our country know it is, and I think they're terrified of the implications of this happening. And, of course, what will the American people do when they realize that they've been cheated out of everything they've spent their whole life working for? But there's no instance in all history where a fiat money system has existed for a prolonged period of time. I think it's amazing it's gone as long as it has, but remember, we really were tied to gold until 1971. It's only really been about 35 years since we went off the gold standard completely. But, of course, now I think we've reached the ultimate end of the system. And I think we're right now with 11% inflation, with an M3 running about 14%, according to the figures we've been able to glean. Why, of course, we're talking about runaway inflation within a period of years and, of course, the complete destruction of the monetary fabric of our society. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening, Patrick Wood. And Patrick's raising some very interesting questions. Where is all the monetary gold? We're told the central banks keep selling it. Now, if you actually look at the figures from the New York Fed, and we have those in our syllabus on the financial tsunami, you will find that New York Fed had actually actually claims that they have, I think, I've forgotten how many tons, but they have most of the gold, or about half the gold in the world, they claim they have in their sub-basements, but it belongs to about six central banks, and certainly when one central bank sells gold, they don't pack it up in little packets and ship it off someplace that's usually being purchased by another one of the central banks, and they simply move it on pallets from one part of the basement to another. But I do think that Patrick is probably right that certain countries are accumulating gold. And my understanding is that the Arab countries really are accumulating gold because they want gold behind their currency. Certainly, we seem to think that you can have a fiat system with nothing behind your currency, but sooner or later the day of reckoning comes. So pick the story up there, Pat.
Well, yes, the gold to the Middle East mindset is kind of it's a cultural, it's a sociological thing, it's almost a genetic thing. They migrate to gold. It's just something that they know has the value, is monetary value, and even though they're playing with paper currencies right now as well, and like with all the central banks, I think they have a very firm understanding that that gold is still the ultimate monetary asset in the world. There's no proof, of course, that they have a controlling interest in it. But what the New York Fed and the rest of the central banks will around the world. Remember, all of them, but one or two are private corporations or private banking institutions. So the central bank is not the same as a government in any case. But what the central banks will not say when they report that they hold gold, when they say they hold gold or they have in their possession certain, millions of ounces of gold, that may well be true. But what's not true and what they won't tell you, and this is where the difficulty comes, is for whom are they holding that gold? They will not tell you who the ultimate owner is. It's kind of like a giant Swiss bank conspiracy where they just won't give that information out. And even though the central bank holds the gold, it may not be actually their ownership. They may have already, like you said, it's been transferred into another vault, but it doesn't belong to that central bank that holds it anymore.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Patrick Wood, and he's really talking about the monetary system and, of course, how it relates to what's going on in the Arab countries today, and points out that the Arab countries, although they are certainly working right along with all the other central banks, the fiat money system, in the basic belief of the Arab, the Muslim, they believe you need a gold-backed currency. And they are going to get, hopefully, or maybe from their point of view, they hope to be able to have a stable currency. And when the fiat money system that really is being used throughout the world begins to erode, they're going to, of course, the Arab countries are going to look for the stability of gold. And we would point out there was a recent article in Foreign Affairs magazine talking about how they need to have a global currency, a global gold-backed currency, a privately issued gold-backed currency, global gold-backed currency, because you can't trust governments to do what's right. And so you want, of course, get people who you can depend upon, and those would be the private people who own the gold, who would create a currency that would be stable and would not, of course, lose its value. So anyway, before we go on, though, Patrick, I'd like you to give your website, your telephone number, so people would know how to get the information you have there at the August Review.
Certainly, Dr. Stan. It's www.augustreview.com, and the information on our site is free. We encourage contributions as a person has the ability and means to do that, but we are a part of or a publication of World Research Library, which is a global elite research center, and We make a study of globalization. That's what we do. We write about it in as many forums around the world, and including in the United States, because we are citizens of the United States, as you are. So we're concerned about our own home turf, but we are especially concerned about the entire world. And that's why we can look at areas like the Mideast and stuff and ask some questions and say, how is globalization, affecting these countries as well?
Well, certainly we heard a great deal about the fact that the Arab countries are accumulating at least some gold, and I think that they realize that the world monetary system is on the verge of collapse. And they want gold so that they will have something behind their currency. Here in the United States, we have nothing but the integrity of our president behind our currency, unfortunately. And, of course, a government that wants ever more in the way of taxes from the people to try to maintain some sort of stability. And everything is in place now for a military dictatorship here, because they anticipate there's going to be tremendous unrest when this whole monetary system falls apart. So pick up the story there, Patrick.
Well, that's exactly right. And I think part of the reason that Halliburton found it convenient to move to Dubai when they did was that they saw that there was such a great future for them there that they literally just pulled the plug and abandoned their U.S. Headquarters and operations and stuff, and said we're moving, and we're moving now. I think we're going to see more and more companies are going to be taking the same thing, where they say, look, we're getting out of here. Call it the rats deserting the sinking ship. I don't know. But for those companies that have the wherewithal and the insight probably to bail out, you just have to ask the question, especially since Vice President Cheney headed Halliburton one time. You have to just wonder, what kind of inside information did Halliburton have that they felt it was necessary and even wise to bail out the United States in total? And go find another place in the world to take shelter.
Well, I think really what we're seeing today, Patrick, is more and more of the corporations are no longer American corporations. They're global corporations.
Yes.
General Motors is no longer an American corporation. They're a global corporation with factories in Canada and Mexico and certainly in Europe and in China. And we're seeing more and more of this with our entire automotive industry. And, of course, we're even seeing other countries like Toyota. It's no longer a Japanese company. It's a global company. And, of course, if there are very favorable places like Dubai or Abu Dhabi where they can go and not have to pay any taxes, would there be any reason we would expect them not to move there? I think we're going to see a huge sucking sound as not only our factories and our jobs, but many of our major corporations are going to be moved elsewhere. And as America moves from being a first world nation into a second world nation status. But we're going to have to see. What are your thoughts on that? And incidentally, if you're out there in the listening audience and you'd like to give us a call, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you have a question for our guest, Patrick Wood, of the August Review. Patrick, go right ahead.
Well, it's fun to it's fun and slightly profitable to kind of speculate about these types of things and ask these types of questions. My guess is that we've seen some real surprises come out of the Mideast. Most we hear about all the wars and stuff going on over there, but and all the threats from Iran and so on, but we don't see the flip side of the Middle East, like what we're talking about tonight with Dubai and Abu Dhabi. And I think we're going to see some more surprises come out of that entire area. I think there's a good chance at some point that we may see some talk about the Arab nations being involved in the global currency to involve them or wrap them into the world system more fully. If they indeed have been accumulating gold over a period of time, they will be the strong man in the financial system. That will be a switch from, what we have right now with our current Wall Street establishment in New York being our financial center. And, of course, San Francisco is going to be part of that, too, but and Chicago and so on. But, basically the banking institutions in our country may be well gutted by that time because they're all setting up financial sub-centers, regional centers, global centers in Dubai and Abu Dhabi right now. So as they take over the world monetary system there, what we have in our country may just be a shell of what it used to be.
And I don't think
establish a new system there.
And I don't really think that J.P. Morgan or certainly these other major banks have any loyalty to America. Their loyalty is this internationalist dream, and they're, of course, going to go where the maximum benefit to them is.
Exactly.
They could care less about America. Well, let's go to Debbie, who's calling us from Flint, Michigan. Hi, Debbie. How are you doing?
Oh, fine.
You have a question for our guest?
Yes, I do. I'm curious as to why, whenever I go into a food store or a gas station, it seems to be an Arab. And I'd like to know how Hillary Clinton fits into all this.
Well, of course, I think, first of all, you live in Flint, Michigan, and we know that there's a tremendous concentration of the Muslim people in both Detroit and in Flint, Michigan. The Muslims have simply gravitated there. So I don't think that's true across the country, but I think it's probably very true where you live. Do you have any thoughts at all upon that, Patrick?
Dr. Stan, I couldn't quite hear her question.
Well, basically, Debbie lives in Flint, Michigan, and she wanted to know why, when she went into many stores or into gas stations, the people who were operating them were primarily Arabs.
Yes.
And I was simply pointing out that the Muslims have certainly targeted that area of Detroit and Flint, Michigan, but that really is not really characteristic of most of the rest of the country.
I think that's probably right, although there are pockets in our country that like that, where there are concentrations of Muslims, and they do tend to take over service industries, retail industries like that, that the stores, the gas stations, the mini marts and stuff like that. In California, I've noticed over the years that the East Indian community has been the primary player in all those little mini markets and service stations and stuff.
Sometimes they're very hard workers. Sometimes they're very, very good businessmen, Debbie. But unfortunately, it was during the Vietnam War that they changed our immigration laws. One of the reasons for the Vietnam War was so our attention would be diverted out of the tragedy that was unfolding in the Far East, Near East. And at the same time, then, of course, we were altering America. We were changing our immigration laws, taking God and prayer out of our schools, centralizing all power in Washington, D.C., gutting the Constitution, the finding that women had a right to to abort her unborn child. The Vietnam War was a very convenient diversion as America was transformed, and a very important part of that was to change the immigration laws, which has led to exactly what's going on today. You ask what part that Hillary Clinton plays in this? Probably absolutely nothing, other than the fact that she is a Democrat, and it was Ted Kennedy and the Democrats who did this, but unfortunately we have a lot of Republicans who are globalists and not really Americans. Their loyalty is not to America, but to this internationalist dream. Does that answer your question?
So how does Hillary Clinton fit in all this?
I think simply because she's a Democrat, because she wasn't responsible for what has gone on as far as the immigration. Although, of course, if she was in power, she would be pushing unbridled immigration, I'm sure. All right, anything else?
Well, thank you so much.
God bless you. And keep listening. And you got all the other people there in Flint listening to us, will you?
Okay.
Good night. God bless. We have one of our primary stations there in Flint this time of night. Our telephone number again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And I would simply point out that many Muslims are hardworking people, but they have a different worldview. Many East Indians are hardworking people, but they have a different worldview. And, of course, if you many of these Spanish-speaking people are good people, but many of them have a different worldview, and they want to maintain their culture. And, of course, those people who would destroy our nation and get us to begin fighting among ourselves, what a multicultural, multilingual nation, so they can play one group against the other, as they so effectively played the black against the white. and the white against the black here in the United States. And believe me, the people on one hand who say how terrible discrimination is, on the other hand, they're doing everything they can to foment it, because they want unrest, they want hatred here in the United States. Go right ahead, Patrick.
Well, Jacqueline, one of the things that that draws me to look at the Mideast in particular, Dr. Stan, is because for many years I have been, you know, had a rather acute and ongoing interest in Bible prophecy. And, you know, there's so many things that are just difficult to understand in Bible prophecy for a lot of people, even for myself, from the book of Daniel and from the book of Ezekiel and from the book of Revelation and so on. There's lots of things that are, you just have to scratch your head and wonder, well, I just don't get what that says. But I would like to encourage your listeners, among other things, just in light of the of what we're talking about tonight, to read a chapter in the book of Revelation. It's the last book in the Bible, chapter 18 in particular, where it talks about a great city of great luxury in a Mideast setting called Babylon, and talks about the actual the actual destruction of Babylon. But part of the interesting phraseology in that in this passage is that talks about merchandise of gold and silver and precious stones and pearls. There's some of the great pearl beds are in the Mediterranean right there. Fine linen and purple, silk and scarlet. Talks about luxury and so on. Cinnamon, incense, fragrant oil and frankincense and so on. Cattle and sheep, horses and chariots and so on. Talks just great luxury that it's picturing there. It gets to the end of it, and it's one of the just the most interesting statements. It says in verse 19, when you get down to the end of it, it says, they threw dust on their heads and cried out, weeping and wailing, saying, alas, alas, that great city, in which all who had ships on the sea became rich by her wealth, in 1 hour she is made desolate. And the whole picture of this great city called Babylon is that it was made possible by the ships of the earth who brought the merchandise, the building materials, because there's nothing over there like that by themselves. Everything's imported. The ships of the world had gotten rich by the trade that was taking place between those ships, wherever the goods came from, and the people in the Mideast. So at this point in time in Bible prophecy, it would seem like the focus of the world is on that those Middle Eastern countries. And talks about every shipmaster, all who traveled by ship, sailors, and as many as trade on the sea, stood at a distance and cried out when they saw the smoke of her burning, saying, what is like this great city? And this is in part, Dr. Stan, that gives me, you know, especially an acute curiosity about how globalism is coming out to play today in the world. And if any of your listeners have the stamina to dig into the book of Revelation and not be too afraid of it, but to read chapter 18, they'll find some incredible similarities to what we're talking about now with Abu Dhabi and Dubai. And I'm not suggesting that they're Babylon either, by the way. But we see that kind of parallel here, where these cities are being just literally just sprouted up out of the desert with billions and billions and billions of dollars being thrown at them.
Well, I think the most amazing thing in Dubai is they're actually building islands right offshore where these massive developments and hotels are going. These are some of the biggest and most luxurious hotels in the world. Some places $20,000 a night for a suite.
Yes.
$30,000 a night for a suite. You have to... The wealth there is just amazing. And Chris, you know, you talk about alas Babylon. I mean, there's some people who think it's New York. Some people think it is the true Babylon. Perhaps you're right. It is Dubai and Abu Dhabi. We just don't know what it is. But I think that very, very soon we're going to see some dramatic revelations as to the fulfillment of biblical prophecy.
Exactly. And things become more clear as time goes on. I guess, you know, we can say that for certainty, and who knows how long Elvis will continue. But You know, we keep looking, watching, studying, and my motto over the years, as you know, is follow the money, follow the power. And that eventually will lead you to all the smoking guns. And we've been pretty successful with that for a long time. And that was what Tony taught me, by the way, back in the 1970s, because that was his motto.
Professor Sutton, and we called him Tony. It was Anthony Sutton. Yep. Not Anthony, but Antony.
Antony
Sutton. And of course, certainly you'd need to go to Patrick's website. Is it augustreview.org or .com?
.com.
Augustreview.com. Fascinating material there. Certainly, Pat's been at this for a good long while. An excellent source of information. So let me recommend to you augustreview.com and go there, get his information. And I think you still have Trilateral Silver Washington. Is that posted on your website?
Actually, Dr. Stan, currently it's not posted on the website. I'm going to repost it again at some point, probably in the near future here.
All right,
for people to download and to read. It's too long for people to print, however.
Oh, that stuff will be right back. Well, Patrick, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, that's good, Dr. Stan. I've had the Mideast on my mind lately, and I just, you know, I felt like it just might be good to kind of, you know, throw out some different ideas. You don't hear these kinds of things in the standard media, of course. They're just not talked about, but you have to raise an eyebrow when you see these little companies, you know, buying up these huge assets that, and you remember Dubai Ports World last year. That was the company that was trying to get control of all the U.S. ports on the eastern seaboard. This little bitty country in Dubai, the size of New Jersey, I forget how many billions they put into it. Almost all of the money came from, from the investment banks. They put 5% down and got 95% financing for that deal, made possible by the international bankers, in other words. But you have to raise an eyebrow when you see these two little countries reaching out and spending $15 billion here, $50 billion there. What is going on, and how does this fit into the whole scheme of globalization? And why are they getting richer and we're getting poorer by the hour?
Well, I think we're living in very, very strange and uncertain times.
Yes.
And what we begin to see, of course, the tax structure of the Arab countries being much more attractive than that of our own country, I think we have to ask some serious questions about which direction America is going. And when we see their currency perhaps being far more stable than ours, and as the dollar is progressively losing its value, having lost certainly about 40% of its value in the last 3 years, and the Arab currency is holding their value, then, of course, where do you think that the industries, where do you think the banks, where do you think that the great corporations are going to go? And, of course, this is what happens when you have irresponsible people in control of a monetary system, and a monetary system is on the brink of destruction. So people are going to look for stability, and certainly Dubai and Abu Dhabi seem to be very significant places. And isn't it interesting that they don't have taxes over there? They don't have corporate taxes, and even if you're a Christian or Jew, your maximum tax is 10%. Don't you wish your maximum tax in the United States was 10%?
It'd be a wonderful thing.
All right. Well, we're in for some dramatic changes in society, and we do hope that many of you out there will certainly access Patrick's information at augustreview.org. That's augustreview.org. And God bless. Thanks so much for being with us, Patrick.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. Bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. We hope that many of you, of course, enjoyed the program this evening and will want to get more information. We do have a pamphlet. It's called The History of Money. You need to have that. You need to get the books to understand what's going on today. The Creature from Jekyll Island. The book, The Federal Reserve Conspiracy, and the book, Fiat Money, Inflation in France. 3 books which we think are vitally important to understand what's going on. Again, The Creature from Jekyll Island, The Federal Reserve Conspiracy, and fiat money inflation in France. If you'd like to, of course, get information on the Trilateral Commission, we carry one of the books that Professor Sutton had written called The Trilateralist. There really is a small group of people who control most of the wealth of our nation, and that it would be the Trilateral Commission. You can get information on them in our newsletters, but certainly we suggest that you get the book written by Professor Sutton, The Trilateralist. And then, of course, we do hope that many of you will give serious consideration to coming to our all-day seminar on the 28th of October right here in the Monterey Bay area. We've got excellent speakers coming in and talking on a number of different subjects. I think you'll find the meeting fascinating. We're going to start at about 8:30 in the morning, go through to 5:30 in the evening. Lunch will be served, and so we have to know if you're coming. Again, that's the 28th of October, and you're going to have the reservations in here in a couple of weeks. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to get a free catalog or a free newsletter, we'd be glad to send it to you. If you've not yet read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, or seen the video, the DVD by that title, if you've not read yet or seen our DVD on None Dare Call It Genocide, going into the genocidal programs that are being waged in America today, or I talk on planned population reduction, they're both in DVD form, our video on population control, our four-tape set on population control and how they've literally killed hundreds of millions of people throughout the world, and they're in the process of doing it today. If you'd like to know about the Operation Paperclip, where the Nazi scientists, the wicked Nazi scientists, were brought to America after the end of the Second World War, that's, of course, Operation Paperclip, and we'll have all of these DVDs at our seminar, and our four-tape set at the seminar. We do hope that you'll come. We have a great new four-tape set, certainly on the impending police state, another one on the North American community, and the demise of national sovereignty. That's a four-tape, a four-CD set, and that goes along with a book called The Late Great USA by Dr. Jerome Corsi. We specifically recommend that. And then a four-tape set on globalism, The Secret Threat. All of these things are important for you to get. If you've not yet, of course, laid in your supplies, in case we do have some sort of a nuclear or biological chemical threat to America, if you'd like to get an emergency food catalog or an emergency supply catalog, we'll be glad to send you one free of charge. If you have one, don't put off making your plans, because believe me, ladies and gentlemen, the time is very late. We do hope many of you, of course, will go to our website at RadioLiberty.com, where you can listen to our program, certainly there live 3 hours a day. You can listen to our live feed to Telstar 5 9 hours a day. It's actually on 24 hours a day, but you can hear Radio Liberty programs 9 hours a day. Certainly, you can listen to our shortwave programs 4 hours a day. We do hope many of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because that's how we're able to do what we do. And we look forward to seeing many of you from out across America at the all-day seminar on the 28th of October, 28th of October, here at the Monterey area, the Aptos Seascape Golf Course. Again, our number, 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com, and then please pray for America. Pray for revival, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection.
Tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.